earlier today too, which is the algae photobioreactor design considerations for commercial scale. And this is the work by MRI, I believe, Midwest Research. And so thank you very much for your presentation. We'll go again 21 minutes. I'll give a 5-minute warning. Great, thank you. And again, I apologize. I wish we had more of the audience we left with.
Sure, that's fine. Thanks. You have to have the necessities of breaking for lunch. My name is Greg Carr. I work for the Midwest Research Institute in Kansas City. Today I'm speaking, of course, with the some design considerations. A lot of this is going to be a fairly big picture. My intent of this talk is to kind of give an overview of the state of the industry, where it's at, in my view, and I'll speak just to some of the direction of where MRI is going with it, but nothing in, I guess no graphs and charts at that point would be my state. In my view, this is kind of the way I look at the industry, and algae, I'm a farm kid originally, and for algae to take off, I really believe that it has got to become algae farming. And kind of the analogy I would like to bring with this is where the industry is making, you know, commercial production type volumes. It's really still using a horse and plow, and that's kind of where most of the there's a lot of small scale work going on, but as far as production wise, we're kind of in that horse and plow state. Of course, where the direction you want to go, you want to get to the future where it resembles the modern agriculture machine that has been produced over the last 70 or so years. Turn of the century is when a lot of this started. So you're looking at a long progression for traditional agriculture, and that the algae farming, and I speak more of just for the production of biofuels, not. And I kind of discount that. I do realize there was a 20-year study at NREL where a lot of the basic research was done and some cultivation for non-energy purposes. That has been going on for some time. But really looking at where this last push of commercialization has been headed. And we're about, I kind of put it as about 5 to 7 years into it. And to try to bring some parallels to the earlier talk of paralleling the internet to the power grid is kind of the same type of path I'm going down. And you look at where farming was at around the turn of the century. Farming was done. It was crops were grown and harvested. However, it required very high inputs. And I speak mainly in labor, horsepower type inputs at that time. You look at your output per energy, it was a very high energy cost. And large scale operations weren't even conceivable at that time with traditional farming. Or of course, we know it's possible now, but it took many decades to get there. The algae is really in about the same spot. It can be grown. People are growing aquaculture and it can be done. However, it requires high inputs. Not necessarily labor, but it's high energy input for the production that you get. And large scale operations just have not materialized to this point. So where does the algae industry need to go? We're looking at following the same path that the traditional agriculture did. You have equipment improvements that will increase yields and production. Yeah, these methods will continually be refined and made more efficient. And then the big card out there right now is biotech, which really has the ability to drive up yields with hybridization of species, GMO, all those sort of techniques that are around today. However, the big assumption is the industry has to stay alive long enough. Somebody has to care, and there has to be a driving force long enough for all this to take place. I'm going to overview just some brief systems that are currently in place. The open pond system is one that everybody has the most, I guess, working knowledge of, and it's the most well known and used for many different applications. Of course, it has, and this is the picture there is a MRI's Florida Raceway ponds that have just recently been built, I believe this winter was when those came online. And so those are in place down at the MRI Florida to do some production studies. The open ponds, they're lower capital costs, lower operational and maintenance costs. They're a pretty simple system, reliability. However, there's some limitations going forward in the industry of what you can get out of that open pond. You have temperature swings with the environment. You're limited to pretty much growing what native species is around. So your species selection is somewhat limited on how much you can control that. Seasonal fluctuations in northern climates, of course, and then with water usage, you have to think of the evaporational loss that's going to come along with that. And then your outputs, of course, for that lower cost, you sacrifice those yields, production rates, and then you're limited on the product value if you're not able to maintain desired species. And even with this simpler system today, depending on the claims that you get out there, and there's a lot of wild claims thrown around, but the absence of a very large algae open pond system in production today for the use of biofuels feedstocks, to me, dictates that it hasn't really been successful in offsetting even the lower cost of the open pond system. What's receiving most of the research attention and development attention across the country and around the world in a wide variety of designs and techniques is the closed loop bioreactors. Again, this is a picture of MRI's newly operational AlgaeLink photoreactor. It's a closed loop system there in Kansas City. At the field station, it's about a 3,500 liter capacity, and it was recently took off its inaugural seeding just a couple weeks ago. Yeah, and everything is greened up and growing great. Of course, these closed loop systems are much higher technology, somewhat unproven, and you can witness that by the wide variety of designs that are under commercialization right now. It's really the Wild West as far as trying to develop something that'll work. They come with a higher capital cost, higher operational cost. You're gonna have all these moving parts that are gonna break down and you gotta keep track of. The advantages of them and why they're receiving so much attention, of course, is because you have better production controls. You can control temperature although some systems it's easier to control on the low side, necessarily the high side. You're theoretically able to maintain, I won't say a monoculture, but at least a dominant species, because you can close these systems up somewhat and grow your species of interest. You reduce the evaporational loss that comes with an open system. And they offer the potential, and at small scale, they showed the potential to really increase production rates. And then with that, species selection allows you to select the higher value products that you want to produce. However, the billion-dollar question, I say billion because billions are being spent on it, is can these higher production rates ever justify the currently in some of the systems that have been proposed and piloted, the extremely large capital costs and operating costs that come along with it. So it's really a big unknown at this point with the trade-offs. And what I want to do here, and this is just a quick high-level overview of kind of the big, what I'm looking at is the big picture, your capital costs, operational costs, and revenues. And so as I look at some of these different systems that are being developed, how do you try to put them on some basis? And this is really a cost of capital versus not the volume of production, but the value of that production. So that's what I always put it as an engineer. You always want to put it on some common basis in which you can somewhat compare apples to apples. I put investment risk and the trade-off of going higher versus lower in looking at some of the systems that have been proposed and developed. Sometimes there's kind of almost that cough factor that comes with these investment risk of, when you start penciling out the hardware and the equipment that it's going to take, you end up to something that that's in the, you know, say 500,000 per acre to build out, and then at the next breath the person says, and we're going to build out 1,000 acres of this stuff. You do the math real quick, you're up to $500 million of investment. How do you get over that hump, and how do you even pretend there's going to be enough output out of that system to justify that kind of cost? So sometimes that investment risk is a big hurdle even mentally to get over. Land usage, I bring this up as the high, there's a lot of different designs out there. Some of them are very land intensive, some of them are more vertical, and that's really a capital cost, but it's not a capital cost that is constant across the country. And I speak to this of some of the designs, and I'm a Midwest kid, so I'll use my East Coast bias in the opposite sense. Some of the designs coming out of the East Coast, they really take a high value of land. I mean, because there are these huge vertical systems, and then they come out here to the Midwest and are going to build these out. Well, land values are different, almost orders of magnitude, and some of these, and so you really have to put that in a basis of sometimes in certain areas a higher lower land-intensive system may be optimal, but there'll be other places where land is not the most valuable part of capital, and you need to trade that balance off of what those land values are. Light collection is another one. Of course, a natural light collection, having a solar window of some sort that lets natural light penetrate, there's limitations to how much can be collected and distributed with that method, but it's generally lower cost. There's other systems out there that are looking at solar collectors, fiber optics, piping light into these systems. They get a very nice increase in light utilization, but it comes at a cost. And where those light collection and distribution systems are right now, the cost just, they're not where they need to be deployed. Service life is one that I feel gets overlooked a lot. It's always great to build a tank on some of these systems, and they'll last a long time, but there's a cost to the cost of materials and how that plays out over thousands of acres. On the flip side of that, you see some systems out there that are using really thin plastic type covers and those sort of things. If you've ever been out in western Kansas, the wind blows, and it blows hard. And it's really non-relenting, the hail, ice storms, all these sort of things. You need some sort of service life that is dependable enough that doesn't totally wipe out your entire algae farm as these severe weather comes up, because it's going to happen. The production controls, that's one of the trade-offs of how much automation, how much does the system need to be monitored? That's a point that I would say that you sometimes, as a scientist, and you want to put in as much of those meters and controls that you can really see what's going on. But for a system to be successful and move to more of the farming sense, those sort of controls, if they're in there, they really need to be justified and show that they can be costed out, that you get the productivity out of that. Of course, productivity. That's kind of the end result of that. Product value, I speak to that in maybe going forward here on as algae species get better categorized and even modified, there's probably going to be a cost that comes along with that. All the work that's going to be done, somebody's going to need to be paid for it. So that's a trade-off of going with a garden variety type species that can that's robust and is available versus something that may be especially developed. Your operational costs, the end of higher end, lower end. I can see actually initially maybe labor labor is something that can really add up fast, especially when you start talking thousands of acres types farms. But in a sense, maybe it also has its advantages of being more flexible. And as these systems come online, to be able to learn how to use them, it's a trade-off of which ends up being the lower cost versus the controls. Maintenance, of course, more speaks to service life, and I always view that the more moving parts you have, the more moving parts you have, the more you're going to have maintenance issues. Utilities is all about pumping gas and water around these systems. Adds up very quick. I mean, the energy it takes to move, especially if you're talking flue gases, is really astronomical. Water sources get into, are you using wastewater? Is there cleanup involved? Is anything contaminant? Those sort of trade-offs. Growth nutrients, a lot. It'd be great to use waste streams, but what else is in that waste stream? Does that have to be sterilized or controlled as it comes into there? Your gas input, again, the energy and even the source of what toxins are in that or possible contaminants. And then maintaining your culture. If you're going to create a dominant species, there's going to be culture issues. Revenues. You know, you could just put it on this biomass that you create. You could just put it on a coal plant and burn it. Now, that's a very low value, but it's one that could always be there, and it would have an energy content. As you move up the scale, the animal feed, the oil, of course, which is kind of the main target that everybody's going after. There's also all the other feedstocks because all the biomass that is created, it has starches, it has celluloses. The animal feed value would be proteins. And then the other big thing out there is the high-value components, compounds that need to be discovered. There's 3,000 different species of algae. There's going to be higher-value compounds in there. The other sources of revenue are can you get paid for treating wastewater? In some instances, you are going to be able to. And then the big one is CO2 mitigation. I did not get into harvesting on this talk. That is a huge issue, stumbling block that everybody's going to have and lots of people are dealing with, but that is a whole nother, nothing out there right now is cost effective and everybody's battling it. Government issues, subsidies, regulation, all these things will tip the scale one way or the other of whether something is commercially viable. The energy markets, as we can see, that they've, price of energy has gone down lately, that takes some steam out of the development. Competing technologies, this is going to compete on the same platform as all the other biomass collection, traditional farming, all those things are basically competitions. And then the impact of the GMO species that are going to have huge regulatory issues, but could offer a big advantage going forward. So what's optimal? It's all going to depend. Where you're at, what are your available resources? I really see that you could end up with several different, very conflicting, I guess, designs that could be successful in various parts of the country. So I guess that my point is there's no real right answer right now. And you really just have to look at every site, inputs, trade-offs that have to be made to try to implement a profitable system. And that is my speech. All right, thank you.
Finished about 2 minutes ahead.
Do you want
some questions?
Sure, go ahead.
Any questions?
Yes.
What sort of nutrients are you using?
We're using at MRI, we're just at this point, as we're just getting started, we are using a standard aquaculture nutrient solution. So nothing exotic at this time. Really, we're at the phase where we're proving these systems out, learning how to operate them, the effects that just CO2 addition, water, or not water necessarily, but sunlight have on maintaining a good, strong culture. Those are all these sort of other input studies are going to be, I guess, available for these systems, these kind of prototype systems that could be studied moving forward.
I think we have a question here and here.
Yes.
What is your operational cost in terms of energy usage for your facility in Kansas City?
I would hate to even guess at that point, but it's not a system that's even remotely meant to be, at the scale it is not going to be economical. It's really a 3,000 liter, it allows us to get out of the lab, produce a fairly large volume of material. I don't know if that's even a thing to keep track of at this stage. It's really just to be able to start growing and harvesting larger volumes of biomass. Huge. I don't know. That's something that the government agencies, one, have they even thought of? And two, because algae in general is spread so easily, and that's the reason contamination is such an issue. What you have to prove to a government agency to say that this is not going to get out and create the blob, I don't know. Of course, if it does create the blob, you can always just go cut a little off of it and harvest it. So. I can't answer that. I mean, there are people at MRI that's looked at that, but I'm not one of them, so I don't have that off the top of my head. I can't even think of what the oil contents are, whether we're measuring that. So
they range.
The cultures that are being Florida, since it's an open pond, I think they're growing kind of whatever grows there. So it's going to be a multi-culture. We're using Cynodesmus at Kansas City, and I don't have the component profile of that.
Are you getting a culture to UT?
A what?
Are you getting a culture to UT?
University of Texas.
No, they actually came from internal, so we did not start with a UT culture.
Just had a quick question. I don't know if you're using Anachloropsis or any saltwater algaes, but
no, they're all freshwater.
All freshwater.
Yes.
Just curious, if saltwater algaes are utilized, is that a potential use for, say, saline wells and other that wouldn't be usable for any other resource?
And that goes to my point that in some places where saltwater is available, it's going to be not just on the coast, but even internally where you have those saltwater wells and those sort of things. I guess my takeaway I'd like of this is it's going to take a lot of flexibility and look at the resources around you and not try to put a square peg in a round hole.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks again. Great talk. Very nice to have.